Benjamin Franklin once said that discontented man finds no easy chair. Now, some of you, that's the man that you have in the $100 bills. He said, to the discontented man, no chair is easy. Or the discontented man never finds an easy chair. You know, there are many who struggle with contentment in this life. I mean, some people think that in order for you to be content, and you know, the word content means happy, satisfied, pleased in life. Some people think in order for you to be content that you have to have stuff, things. I mean, sometimes you hear people say, well, if I just get that new car, I might be happy, I'd be content. If I can just go to that university, I'd be content. If I can just marry X or Y or this one, I'd be content. And so a lot of us, you know, and that's part of the American dream, because remember, the American dream says the pursuit of happiness, like something you got to go and try to get. So people view contentment in the same way. If I can only get that, I will be content. And what happens is, usually you get it and you're still miserable. You're not content at all. And you know, this idea, I mean, Benjamin Franklin said it right. I mean, the discontented man, no chair is ever easy. And you saw, 2 weeks ago, I saw a lot of people discontented online. You know, because of what happened, the election. It still ripples the effect of what happened. People still unhappy, unpleased, even though we have this great nation of ours, and we did things according to... That's what people wanted him. You know, people wanted Donald Trump to be the president. But people were discontented because they happened. You know, and so you saw it on Facebook, and some of us did not even want to get on Facebook because it was like this animosity and things. People were just lashing at each other. And someone said, what's going on? I mean, we already have enough issues of our own, and now it's like we cannot even get on Facebook because people are so discontent. And you know, they're just like, and I would go on Facebook, but I chose to post things about Jesus to encourage people. I posted things about the Cubbies, you know, baseball stuff, but I'm not going to get into politics and things like that because it's not worth it. You know, and people, like I said, so many discontented people, unhappy on social media. They let others know how displeased they were about what's going on in our society. They were so discontented with the outcome of the election. Now, I don't know why God wanted me to talk about this today, but He had, when I saw that 2 weeks ago, it was in my mind. So maybe it's time that I bring that up so that we find contentment, or we define contentment the way the Bible describes it or defines it for us. Because, you know, when you go through scriptures, it's very interesting to me that the man that can teach us about contentment, he really had a rough life. I mean, he had a tough life. And he's the one that can really teach me and you about how to learn how to be content in life. I mean, this man was persecuted. He was rejected by his peers. He was beaten, flogged. He got locked in prison for something he did not do, for something that it was unjustly for him to go to prison, but he was in prison many, many years. He got shipwrecked one time, got bit by a snake, and people thought he was going to die. I mean, talking about having it rough, this man is just like, and he's the one that talks about being content. And it almost doesn't make sense that how can you talk about being content when, look at your life. I mean, you had it rough. Many of us are familiar with this man. His name was Paul. And to me, it's interesting even more that he wrote about contentment from a prison cell. I mean, hello, the last place on the planet you want to be, and he's writing a letter to a church telling them, I'm content. And you go like, hold on, Paul, how can you be content when you're in jail and you did not commit a crime? It just doesn't make sense. You know, it's just the same guy we're talking about. He's the one that says, rejoice in the Lord always. I say it again, rejoice. Rejoice in the Lord always? I mean, you and I know that sometimes we have times in our lives that rejoicing might not be on the radar. Like, we don't want to rejoice right now. I just want to get even. You know, and he said, he's writing that, by the way, when he said, rejoice in the Lord always, maybe with shackles in his hands and, you know, in his feet. Rejoice in the, It's like what the psalmist says, you know, you see contentment. He says, this is the day the Lord has made, I will rejoice. In other words, he says, it doesn't matter what the day brings, I'm going to rejoice and be glad in it. And Paul is saying the same thing, writing from a prison. You see, Paul visited this church called in Philippi around 52-53 A.D., you know, and that's the first time he visited that, and he planted a church. It's interesting, when he went there, the church didn't have a lot of men. The majority of the people of that church were women. There was a disciple that named Dorcas. And so Paul preaching there, and the Philippi didn't have a Jewish synagogue because they had more Greek people, and he established a church in there. Then 10 years later, like about 62-63 A.D., he's in prison, and he's writing a letter to the church in Philippi. Now, you and I know Paul wrote a lot of letters, and many of Paul's letters are, be honest with you, they're kind of hard to understand sometimes. Most of Paul's letters, he's always addressing issues of theology and things like that. People that, perhaps the Corinthians, for instance, they were just getting drunk and not helping each other. And he had to write a letter to correct the issues that they had. The letter he writes to the Philippians, he's not addressing any theological issues or any church issues. You know, the letter he wrote to the Philippians is a thank you letter. You know, like you're saying thank you cards around Thanksgiving. Paul is writing a great thank you letter to the church of Philippi. He's so grateful for them. And it's to them that he said, rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again. Rejoice. In Philippians, you got your Bibles with you. Philippians chapter 4. We're going to spend some time there. I mean, it's such a beautiful... It's only four chapters. You can read it. The moment you start reading it, he says, I thank God every time I remember you. Now, keep in mind, he's writing this from prison. He wrote Colossians from prison, Philippians. And, you know, there were some letters that he wrote while he was in jail. And at least they gave him the freedom to dictate, to write. And somebody else would write it. To write to the churches and tell him how he was doing. Like I said, you don't find, you know, to the Galatians, he had to correct him about the law and grace. To the Philippians, it's all about thank you. I thank God for you. I thank you so much for our partnership in the gospel he talks about. I mean, I found a little picture. And I thought about, like, that's kind of neat. And there he is with the shackles. And he's like, rejoice in the Lord always. I mean, how crazy. That doesn't sound American to us. Well, I don't know, and your coach, I'm rejoicing when you're in jail? No, like, get me out, Lord, please. And it's like, no, not even once through that letter you hear Paul saying, like, in fact, he even said, If my going to prison means people coming to the Lord, so be it. And someone like, this guy was crazy in their own estimation. But like I said, somebody who can teach me about contentment, I just got to look at his life. And when we look at Paul, we can learn so much about what contentment truly is. So in chapter 4, and picking it up in verse 10, this is what he said to the church in Philippi. Here it is again. I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you have renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you have been concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. Listen to the words of that man. And again, picture, I cannot emphasize that enough. He's not at his desk typing, or, you know, maybe with, he's in prison when he's saying those words. So just go with me for a moment. Like, and by the way, it's not a U.S. prison, but you got some, you know, people, you clean everything. He's probably in a hole, in a dungeon in those days, with chains, and he still can say, rejoice in the Lord. I greatly rejoice for you. And it's interesting. Look at the relationship that this church had with Paul. It says, you've always been concerned about me. The only thing is that you have not had the opportunity to show your concern for me. And finally, they were able to do it. And he's writing to thank him, to thank the believers of that church for the partnership that they share with one another in the gospel. This church supported Paul time and time again, whether they, like I said, just that they didn't have a chance here. And Paul had a gift from them, and he's writing them just to be grateful, to show them his appreciation for them. So when I think about contentment, one of the things I learned is that contentment is something that you learn. It's not something you pursue or you go after. To be content is something you have to learn. It's not something you gotta go and pursue. Let me explain that better to you. Paul said here, I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. You see, contentment is more an attitude that you have to adapt. It's a choice you and I have to make. He made the choice to be content even when he was in prison. You see, for some of us, we have the idea that it's something you got to pursue. Like if you get that career of your dreams or whatever, then you will be content. And you might not be. Because then your contentment is based on that. So the moment that thing that, according to you, makes you happy is gone, then you won't be happy. You know, like people say, well, that's my dream, or he or she is my world. When he or she is gone, then your world literally falls apart. So Paul says, I learned. Notice he says, I learned. So even to learn anything, you and I have to make a choice. You can go to school all day long and not learn anything, not because the teachers were bad, but because you chose not to learn it. He says, I learned to be content, whatever my situation. So let me tell you that it's not the situation or circumstances you go through that determine your contentment, but you must determine to be content in the circumstances you go through. It's not a situation that determines my contentment. I must determine how content I will be in the situation. You understand what I'm saying? So the situation should not determine how happy you're going to be. You must choose how you're going to respond to the situation. You understand what I'm talking about? So this is how he responded. He said to them, I'm not saying this because I am in need, because I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. So I don't, whether I have plenty, whether I don't have a lot, I will be content. I will be pleased with what I have. I will be happy with, this is what I have, you know, with the means that the Lord gave me. So that's what I'm saying, that the circumstances you go through should not determine how you're going to respond. But you got to determine how you're going to respond to whatever circumstances and issues you're going through in this life, just like Paul did. Now, he mentioned some of the circumstances he lived. He said, I know what it is to be in need, and he did. And I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret. He says, it's a secret to be content in any and every situation. Even when I'm in prison, I can be content. Even when I have a palace, I can be content. Even when I don't have a lot, I can be content. You see, sometimes we try to teach that to our kids with the toys that we give them for Christmas, because like if they don't get the one they wanted, they go like that. And like you try to tell them, you know, there are kids in the world, they don't even have a third of what you have, and they seem to be happy. And it's like we try to educate them, to teach them how to be content with what they have. Maybe mom and dad cannot afford the Xbox you want, but you be content with a Nintendo. Or something, you know what I mean? It's like, seriously, like, oh, a PlayStation 2 that you might not find a lot of games, but you say, I'll be content with that. You know, this is what, you know, but we try, that's an example right there. Some of us know. Or like, maybe I just want the Blu-ray. I don't want to watch movies on DVDs anymore. And then you fret and you, that's not contentment. You're content with whatever you have. And that's what Paul is saying. You know, that's not going to determine my happiness. I'm going to be happy whatever it is that life brings to me. I'm going to be pleased, he said, because I have learned the secret to be content in any and every situation. And he's showing us that right now. Now, let me just give you a glimpse of Paul's issues that he had. I mean, he writes to the church in Corinth, the Corinthian church. And there, I just want to read that for us. Some of the things that he highlights, some of the things that he mentions. 2 Corinthians 6, verse 3 through 10. He talks about, he says, we put no stumbling block in anyone's path so that our ministry will not be discredited. Rather, as servants of God, we commend ourselves in every way, in great endurance, in troubles, hardships, afflictions, that's the ESV, calamities, beatings, imprisonments, riots, labors, sleepless nights. Some of us know what that's like. Hunger, by purity, knowledge, patience, kindness, the Holy Spirit, genuine love. And then he goes on, by truthful speech and the power of God, with the weapons of righteousness for the right hand and for the left, through honor and dishonor, through slander and praise. He's went through that. People slander him bad. People praise him. And then he goes, we are treated as imposters, and yet we are true. As unknown, and yet well known. As dying, and behold, we live. And punished, and yet not killed. As sorrowful, yet always rejoicing. As poor, yet making many rich. As having nothing, yet possessing everything. I mean, listen to that man talk. And you see, he's the one that can really teach us about all the things he went through in life. And for him to say, rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. No wonder he said, I learned. You know, whatever situation we get through in this life, there's always a lesson behind. And then you and I will have to make a choice. Are we going to learn to be content, whatever this is? Lord, you know, I don't have enough to pay the bills this month, but, you know, you're still on the throne. And I'm going to be content, and you do your thing. Sometimes that's been my prayer. And God always comes through because he owns everything. But at that moment, maybe he's just trying to teach you to be patient and wait on the Lord. Like David. Remember when he says, even though I walk through the valley of shadow of death, I fear no evil because you are there with me. And you are my shepherd. You guide me through paths, you know, through green pastures, and you comfort me. You know, my cup is overflowing. Check this out. When David wrote that psalm, he was a fugitive. He was hunted down by a king who didn't like him. And he said, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not be in want. That, my friends, that's showing me contentment right there too. Paul learned the secret of being content regardless of the situation he lived. Check out verse 12 of our text, Philippians 4:12. He said, I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. And you know what the secret for Paul was? Verse 13 would tell us. So my friends, don't let your situation dictate how you are to respond to it. But you choose to respond rejoicing no matter what the situation is. And please, hear me out. This is hard. I mean, this is one of the hard teachings that was like, really, because you know we're human beings and we struggle with that sometimes we do not respond the way that God would want us to respond. But sometimes we let the situation or your friend, like sometimes our mood would change because we saw somebody that it's like you already have to determine. So, you know, I'm going to be content either that person likes me or not. And I'm going to say hi whether she or she says hi to me. And just leave it there. I mean, that's like, you know how hard that is sometimes? And it's like just being content, whether, you know, it's like whether I'm hungry or whether I have enough food to eat, whether you like me, whether you're not, whether you like me on Facebook or not, I'm going to be content. You know, and this, like, it's an attitude of the mind that you and I have to do, like Paul did. Even you are in a prison cell and you say that you are content in the Lord and you learn the secret. What was your secret? It wasn't yoga. I'd like to know what it was. And he said this, his secret to contentment is in verse 13, a famous, famous passage, a verse that many of us have even memorized. Now, let me just take you back to verse 6. This is Paul again in the same letter, chapter 4, verse 6. Look at what he had told him before before we see verse 13. Verse 6 of chapter 4, he says, do not be anxious about anything. That's not American either. We know how to be anxious and like, you know, worry about everything. He said, okay, hold on a moment. You're writing me that from prison. You said, do not be anxious or concerned about anything. Do not be anxious. I mean, we know what that's like. We have to take medicine in order for us to not be anxious. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, you are writing this from prison. Present your request to God, and the peace, I love this, the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. You want to know what Paul's secret was to contentment? You probably already know what it was. Jesus. Look what he says. Verse 13. I can do all things through him who gives me strength. I can have a sleepless night because God's going to give me the strength. I can have a lot of food in my pantry because God's going to give me the strength and provide. I can have chaos and tribulation and, you know, whatever, but God's going to provide the strength that I need. And he said, I can do all things because of Jesus. So I was like, wow, that's what his secret was. I can do all things, not just some things, he said, all things through Christ who gives me the strength. You know what Paul, his secret was this. Paul had a Christ-centered perspective. You want to be content in life, you too need to have a Christ-centered worldview. His worldview, his perspective, his outlook about everything he saw was Jesus Christ. When you and I have developed a Christ-centered perspective, we also be content in life. Because we look at everything else through the lens of Jesus. I can do it not because of my own strength. I can do it through him, through the strength that he provides in me. His worldview was Jesus. You see, Paul knew that the Lord, the God he served, is bigger than any situation he can face in life. And you know, church people, we know that too. But sometimes we forget, don't we? We know that we sing, our God is greater, our God is stronger, God, you are higher than any other. Beautiful song. But we just sing it sometimes and we forget that, yeah, he is stronger and powerful than anything. So if he's that powerful, whatever situation I'm going through, he can handle it. And I just have to, Lord, you're in charge. You are in control. Let me just be still and know that you are God. And I'm not. See, having a Christ perspective like Paul will have you rejoicing in the suffering. Isn't that amazing? When you develop a perspective, a Christ-centered perspective, you will be laughing at the struggles in your own life. You say, like, okay, you're going to see the struggles. Like, okay, Lord, it's just like a test that I'm going through. He's going to get me out. I don't know. I mean, it hurts right now. I don't know how long I'm going to be here in the storm. But he's going to come through. He's going to get me out. And out of that storm, out of the fire, you will come out shinier. You remember the Bible talks about, like, metal refined by fire. You know, the metal can talk. It doesn't feel good to be in the fire. But when he comes out, now it's like pure, magnificent. So when we adopt a Christ-centered perspective, you will rejoice. You will have this peace that Paul talks about. You will say, do not be anxious about anything. But in prayer and petition, with thanksgiving in your heart, present your request to God. And the peace of Christ, which transcends our understanding. In other words, that peace that you and I cannot even understand will guard your heart and your mind in Christ Jesus. You will be at peace in the midst of storm and chaos because you see now through Christ. You have the perspective, the outlook of Jesus Christ. And then you are content. You see, through Christ, he says, I can do all things. Through Christ, I can forgive the one that wronged me. Through Christ, I can forgive the unforgivable. Through Christ, I can have peace in the midst of the storm. Through Christ, I can have confidence, even when my world is falling apart. Through Christ, I can be still when I need to. When everybody else is running around, I can just have peace through Christ. That's what Jesus told the disciples. He said, I'm going to give you a peace that the world does not even understand. And Paul now, he found that. He's talking to us about it. I can do all things through him who gives me the strength. I love what Ruben Morgan, the song, we sing Oceans. One of the parts of the song, he says, when the oceans rise and the thunders roar, I will soar with you above the storm. Father, you are king over the flood. I will be still and know you are God. My friends, that's contentment. I mean, how many of us, when a storm hits, whatever it is, we panic. I mean, that's the common human response, to panic or whatever. I mean, we're showing that we're humans. But God said, you know, when that happens, people are going to think you are like an alien or somewhere because you are cool when everything else around you is falling apart. And people want to say, well, how can you be that still? And how can you not respond this way when somebody's just cursing at you? And how is it that you're like, what is it? What's your secret, man? And it's like, Jesus now. I'm operating by his standard. His worldview tells me how to respond to the circumstances. And that's, I will be content. I will be still and know your God, even when the storm rises. You see, the man that says, it is well with my soul. After he went through the place where his daughters and his were drowned, he went back to that place where they were drowned, and all that he can think about was like, it is well with my soul. And then he wrote, like peace like a river. That's how he got inspired to write a song. It's like, to us, like, that just doesn't make sense. How can you be content or cool with that? It's because, let me just give you a better definition of contentment. Now, the one you find on Google or Webster. Contentment is the inner sense of peace that comes from having a relationship with God and knowing that he's still in control. You know, after the election, people talk about, you know who the president is, but you know who always being on the throne. And that should just do it for you. But people say, like, if Jesus is on the throne, no matter who the president is, if it's Lord, it doesn't matter who's in the White House. Because my Lord has the power to control. I mean, he can bless his nation or curse us with whoever it is. I will be still and know that he's king, no matter who's elected tomorrow or who's, you know. And that's for us, my friends. That's showing contentment and hanging on to God. Because he ultimately controls the outcome of everything. You see, when Jesus is at the center of your life, you will be able to be content in any situation like Paul. Even in the midst of the storm and chaos, you will be able to say, I can do all things through Christ because he gives me the strength. Look at what 2 Corinthians, Paul again, talking. 2 Corinthians 12, verse 10. Jesus was Paul's secret to contentment. It was because of Jesus that he was content, that he was okay with whatever the Lord brought him. I mean, you think about somebody who dedicated his life. If you do a research about the most influential Jewish people on the planet, Moses, Abraham, Jesus, Paul is like number 5. This man that we're talking about, the most influential Jewish people, in the Jewish history, he's there. And so many things he wrote, so many letters, most of the New Testament letters, Paul wrote it. And to Corinthians, he's telling them again about Jesus. He's the same guy who says, to me, to live is Christ and to die is gain. If I'm going to live my life, so I'm going to do it for Jesus, he said.